Okay, you've got Ehud Olmert is the new Prime Minister of Israel, and he's part of a new party called Kadima, which was set up by the war criminal Ariel Sharon before he died. And there's not much change in that, although it seems to have 30% of the Israeli popular support. Also, in Israel, you've got the right-wing party Likud, which is going to be set up by, or which is now led by Benjamin Netanyahu, who has got absolutely no compromise whatsoever. So that's between the devil and the deep blue sea, between the choices between them two. But Labour have got a new leader called Amir Peretz, and he's a trade unionist from Morocco. And he's actually very interested in domestic issues, because in Israel you've got a lot of people coming in who are not Jews, who are Jews nominally but not religiously. And they are they're quite secular, and they don't hold to the same ideas. And he is for, the first thing is compromise with the Palestinians. And he wants to sit down and talk. He wants to get out of the occupied territories. He wants to get rid of the old settlements, of the new settlements even, in the West Bank. And I think Amir Peretz, even though I was speaking to a professor from Haifa recently of Israeli history, who's also Jewish and is against the occupation, and he doesn't believe that Amir Peretz is going to have any solutions whatsoever, because he thinks that the US taxpayer basically pays this, and the US government caused the shots, what happens in Israel, and they will not, they will tie the hands of Amir Peretz no matter what happens anyway. So it looks like apartheid will continue in the indefinite future, and the daily humiliation of Palestinians and the constant intimidation, the obstruction of health services and education and ordinary social infrastructure will continue. And I don't agree with what you're... Well, I think Kieran's analysis on republicanism is quite good, and it's interesting always to get an outside perspective on what that means and what it is. We have a lot of rhetoric on 1916. We've got people in Fianna Fáil, for instance, who go along to Bodenstown every year, and then at the same time they call the IRA terrorists. And you've got that sort of double standard going on. Always, like Kieran said, war is a rich man's terror and terrorism is a poor man's war. But I also agree with him that the whole nature of... many within the provisional movement have I think that the power sort of went to their heads a little bit. And I'm not talking about in the political structure. I think that a British soldier is a legitimate target in military terms, because obviously that's what they've signed up for. But on the other hand, there is some of the racketeering, some of the power plays that go on in West Belfast are tantamount to bullying. And that's obviously, it's not anything bad against any individual, it's just that is it bound to happen in a situation where social and democratic infrastructure has been lacking, and has been as largely as a result of British policy, I would believe. But then I also want to say that Kieran was talking about Jimmy Massey. I have heard Jimmy Massey in Binghamton, New York, and you can get this testimony online if you write in the word Citizens Tribunal and Binghamton, B-I-N-G-H-A-M-T-O-N. And he actually said that he witnessed and was part of killing 250 Iraqis outside the Hotel Rashid in Baghdad. And that happened in 2003. We do not hear about most of the American atrocities in Iraq. 40 were killed in a bombing in northern Iraq earlier this week, and the US State Department had no comment on the issue. 40 from the same family. And this was an anti-terrorism operation, they said, against Al-Qaeda. You know, he killed 40 from the same family. But I want to get back to prisons. Prisons do not work. I mean, 80% of the population of Irish prisons are in there because of drugs-related offences. In Switzerland, they've actually legalised heroin to an extent that third time that methadone programs don't work. And methadone is stronger than heroin. It's a ridiculous way out. That they actually give free heroin. These crime rates have gone down by 40%. They had a referendum on this in Switzerland, and it does work. And that referendum is a part of the democratic system I outlined earlier, which is a solution to the problem of democracy, the democratic deficit we have in this society. But also, when we have on Grafton Street, they used to have people been hung every Friday at the end of Grafton Street at 11 o'clock every morning. And there used to be riots. They had to get rid of the public executions. And while these public executions were going on, pickpockets were well in action on Grafton Street. It was their biggest time, biggest bonanza in the week was the actual death penalty. So they weren't obviously frightened by it. Prison works in the same way. Prison doesn't deter anybody. And it doesn't work. If somebody is a danger to society in themselves, I would say that they should not be in society, that they should be probably secluded, but not necessarily in a harmful way. They could be given, they should try to be given a means to get their self-respect and dignity back. That doesn't have to happen through a punitive prison technique. I was talking about unions earlier on, and it's a big irony, the fact that you've got a prisons officer, a prison officer's union. I mean, that's bizarre. You know, that's I don't know what side of the workers are on there. But the idea of prisons just do not work. And obviously, when you've got 80% of the prison population in there for heroin offences, that could be solved overnight. People could get clean gear. They could get free gear and get it from chemists or whatever. And it's definitely possible. If they can actually have great amounts of money in banks, they can do the same in chemists with drugs. And that would get rid of the drugs peddling overnight, because people are not going to sell something that they're not going to make a profit on. So this has been around for years. Tony Gagan of the Merchants Quay drugs project there, outreach project there, actually has recommended this for ages. And the government ministers, I've heard him interviewed in 1997, have always gone down the line of, oh, they tried that in Switzerland, and they give the example of the Zurich Park, and it didn't work. Zurich Park wasn't legalisation. It wasn't anywhere near it. All it just meant that people could shoot up in a park, and it didn't try to a palliative problem that didn't work. Drugs legalisation is definitely part of it. Obviously, it's a rational solution, but we're not living in a rational mechanism of politics at the moment. What we have at the moment is somewhere where you go to buy a house as a first-time house owner, that you get masses of levies put on you, and you've got my landlord, for instance, owns 130 houses. 28% of the house-owning population in Ireland, they own more than one house. We now have Ireland. We know about our problems in history and landlords in Ireland. We now have Irish people going abroad and buying and becoming landlords in the Czech Republic, in Poland, in South Africa, in China. we're actually becoming landlords everywhere else. And obviously, that's got no resonance on anybody whatsoever. But again, the sort of structure we have will keep building till the country is grey. And put the house prices out of everyone's reach, so we're all paying maybe one third of our income up to landlords. A redistribution of wealth from the poor to the rich, which this state has been corrupted by ever since its foundation. We also have a situation like the SSIA schemes. 38% of the people on the SSIA schemes are under incomes of €20,000, which would suggest to me that their parents are actually helping them set up and actually putting this by. And again, it is a redistribution of wealth from areas that it could be going into. It's €500 million a year this is costing, and it could be put on infrastructural projects like more beds in the health service, or like toll roads that don't need to be tolled anymore. I mean, well, people have been paying for 20 years on the M50, long after this particular debt has been paid off. Absolutely ridiculous carry-on. It's just, they want your money, and they want your minds. It's as simple as that. I think Australia has had its hottest year in the past, since records began 200 years ago. The Australian Prime Minister, John Howard, has refused to sign up to the Kyoto Protocol and is still willing to do so. Again, it's part of the same inefficient mechanism we have at the moment, because he is controlled by the oil industry in Israel or in Australia. And I suppose finally, yeah, that's about it. I'll just get that off my chest. I'd invite anybody else to get up here and speak. There's a speaker square, and it's open to everybody, not just to the same speakers, to get up again and again. So please get up, and you're very welcome to speak.
All right, then. See you here. Mm-hmm.